should start. Hello and welcome to the tutorial on constructing tool support for sophisticated analysis of UML models. I am Jan and I will present the tutorial on some work or based on some research that we've been doing at the Software Systems Engineering Group at the TU Munich in Germany. So just firstly some personal introduction and history of the tutorial. So as that chair of Software and Systems Engineering, I'm leading the Competence Center for IT Security. So my main application area for this kind of research I'm presenting here is in fact in developing security critical systems, but this tutorial will be generally about using UML for developing systems, but also in particular systems with specific critical requirements. And one example for that is security, but there are also other examples, of course, safety, dependability, and so on. This doesn't mean that if you're not interested in these kind of non-functional requirements, then this tutorial doesn't make sense for you, because you can use the same, the approach will be presented in a general way. But this is just a special application area that I'm also interested in. And we've been having a lot of collaboration with industry in the group. My background is firstly Masters in Mathematics, and then I did a PhD in Computer Science, and I've been publishing on the subject, and there's also a book on that. There's actually some information there, not only on the book, but also on a workshop and on our tool, so you can pick that up at some point, and you already got the handouts. And this tutorial is part of a series of about 30 tutorials with similar topics, and I already gave you a feedback form that would ask you to fill that in at some point, so you can still keep on improving the presentation. So firstly, the general topic, of course, is software development, and the problem that we've been realizing for quite some time now is that there is a conflict in software development and industry between quality of the software and the cost of developing the software. And cost in terms of money, of course, but also time. And this is maybe quite an obvious conflict, and it has resulted in software so far that is not always satisfactory. I mean, you can see that with the everyday software you're using, operating systems crash. It's better now than used to be, but still can be annoying. But it's, of course, especially a problem in critical areas, which I mentioned already, safety or security critical areas. And there's a real problem. There you can really lose human lives, or you can lose a lot of money, and this really happens. And in the safety area, there are famous examples like the blow-up of the Ariane rocket in 96, which came down to a software error, and other examples as well. And security, of course, you can, if you watch the media, then almost every day you get some problems related to some kind of bug in software. But it's not, as I said already, it's not a problem just with these specific areas, but with software in general. So the question is, how can we fix this problem, given that in industry, if you develop software, then of course you have to operate under time and cost pressure, because you want to be the first to come up with a product, and in order to increase the margin, it should be developed as cheaply as possible. But on the other hand, you also want to have a qualitative product. And of course, people in research have been realizing this problem for quite some time now. And one approach that has been proposed for also quite a number of years now, maybe 20 or 30 years, is came under the label of formal methods. And there people really tried to solve this software crisis using mathematical or logical tools, but it turned out that although scientifically this was really quite successful, the research there, it turned out that it's not really used widely in industry, except for some really special areas like highly safety or security critical systems. And so this somehow didn't work out. but now we still have the problem how to try to increase the quality of the systems. And the idea is now use artifacts that are created anyway during the software construction. So the problem of formal methods was partly people have to learn a new notation, a formal notation, or learn mathematics, and often software developers are not too much into these kind of things. And secondly, often would have to construct a formal specification specifically for using the approach. And both of these things are the reason why formal methods have not been used a lot in practice. So now, instead of trying to learn from the problems there, we could try to take a different approach, and instead of requiring people to learn new things and to write formal specifications, just start with whatever is there in the current industrial development. But still try to use some kind of tool support to increase the quality. And that's what we try to do in this tutorial. We want to construct tool support for an analysis of UML models, and that's the point now. UML models, because UML as a specification language is used increasingly in industrial development. So although, of course, not every software project uses any kind of modeling technique at all, I think by now it's, according to statistics, it's I think about 5 or 10% or something, but the projects that do use some kind of notation, most of them actually use UML. So that's one thing which, at least in some reasonable amount of projects, you can assume that it's already there, or at least developers actually know the notation increasingly now, even because UML is actually taught quite widely at universities. So UML is known, and UML models may already be there. So that's one thing we can try to make use of in order to increase the quality of the software. So try to establish using tools that I'm going to present in this tutorial, try to establish that the software model fulfills certain properties, and therefore the goal would be that the actual code that is somehow derived from the model actually then also satisfies these desired properties, such as performance properties, navigation, security, whatever properties you are interested in. But of course, this is only one thing we could look at. Something else, which I'm not going to talk about a lot here, is of course the source code. In the end, what is going to be executed in the running system is of course the code and not the model. Although some people, so you could take two kinds of views there. You could also, on the one hand, say, I start with UML and I would like to generate the code from the UML models. And whenever that works, then that's fine, of course, because you only have to worry that the UML models are correct, and you can specify the behavior of the system. You can also generate behavioral code from the models, and then you check that the models are correct, and then you generate the code, and everything should be fine. And, but of course, it doesn't always work, at least not at this point. So at some point, you still have to do some manual coding. Then you, of course, have to get to the code, and in the end, what you want is the correct code as opposed to the correct model, because, as I said, the code is executed, not the model, usually. And there are another thing you can do if you don't, if you're not able to use code generation, is patch sequence generation, and I can also mention that at the end of the tutorial, and talk a bit about that. So that's another thing you can get from the UML models to the code. So you can generate test sequences from the UML models to make sure that the implemented code actually does what the model specifies. So that's the second option, that you cannot use code generation completely at least. Then the third thing one can look at in this overall idea of analyzing artifacts which are constructed in the development and the execution of software. So the third thing is actually configuration data. when the if the system is actually running, then usually you have to set up some parameters. So depending on what kind of system this is, that could be some kind of permissions, for example, in SAP business applications. You first have to set up what kind of users can make what kind of transactions. So you have a permission set, and this can also be buggy, of course. Even if the system itself is correct, if the configuration is wrong, then the overall execution will not do what you expect either. And that's also a third part of this approach, which I'm not going to talk about much in this tutorial, because it's really more about domain here, but I just want to mention it to get an overall picture of the approach. So the overall goal is to use tool support to analyze, for example, your mail models, but you can also use it to analyze source code and configuration data. And in this tutorial, I will actually talk about the new mail part. And the goal is then that, so from an academic point of view, of course, you would like to be theoretically sound in the sense that if your tool support tells you that a certain property holds of the UML models, then this is actually the case, because for some reason at some point when you constructed the tool support, maybe you established that the tool is actually correct. That's of course also important. If you provide tool support, then the tool itself of course has to be correct. But depending on your point of view, if you're interested in academia, then this is interesting. If you're interested in practice, maybe not so much, unless you're really interested in highly critical systems where you actually need some proof that whatever tools you're using, all of them are correct. And of course, in practice, you're more interested in having efficient tools, and that could be the analysis could be automated. And one of the particular application domain, as I said already, is critical systems of some sort. So that's the overall idea again. Now, if you just focusing on the software development as opposed to the configuration data and everything. So in software development, and now specifically model-based development, you start out with your requirements first, of course. Then you construct models. And from these models, you get the code. Either, as I said already, by code generation, or you still have to do some manual coding, and then you can get test sequence generation. And the idea is that the models, firstly, are more abstract than the code. This means that, on the one hand, it's easier to analyze them using tool support, because there's not so much information in there yet, and it's easier to change the models if you realize using this tool support checks that something's wrong in the model. It's also better to do this, better to have an intermediate stage before starting with the code, because it's more abstract, it's also easier to change the models. If you realize there's a problem somewhere, you can easier change the models than if you would have to change the actual code in the end. So, a lot of studies have actually established, and starting with Barry Boehm, I think 20 years ago or so, that it's much cheaper to correct errors in early phases of the system design. And that's why we want to use model-based development. And of course, in this tutorial I will focus on using UML to specify the model, but in principle you could of course also use other notations. But this is this tutorial. And okay, why use UML? So the point is that UML has certain advantages. Firstly, by now it's pretty much the de facto standard in industrial modeling. Firstly, starting out with object-oriented systems, but you can also use it for systems that are not necessarily object-oriented. If you take a sort of component-oriented view, where you divide up the system in different parts, which you could view as components, and then there are also quite a few mechanisms in the UML which you can use for components instead of objects. So you just don't use the object-oriented features, and then you can also use it for component-oriented. So that's one reason, of course, why using UML makes sense. A lot of people know UML already, and then because it's the standard, there are also quite a lot of tools already. Most of them, I should say, about drawing UML models, And well, actually in the content of the tutorial is of course to push the border here further, not just draw UML models, but to analyze them in some way. And also UML is relatively precisely defined, considering that it has such a large user base. And saying relatively precisely here, again, of course, depends on your point of view. If you're from academia and have a many formal methods background, then you might say, well, it's not completely precise because the execution, the intended execution of the models, the behavior, is not defined in terms of logic or mathematics. But it's still precise enough because it's at least described in English language, and it's at least more precise than the different kinds of object-oriented notations that had been proposed beforehand, and which at least those that reach a comparable user base in terms of size. So that UML is quite a good starting point also for trying to do this kind of thing we're trying to talk about in this tutorial today. So the goal now is, as I mentioned already, there are quite a lot of tools, but most of them just deal with drawing diagrams and things like that. And maybe also you start to have things like code generation, of course, starting firstly. There were some tools you could do like class definitions, and now increasingly also behavioral code actually. That's something you're starting to get. Something you don't have a lot yet is things like consistency checks. That's something the tutorial will be about, so I will try to explain how one can implement some little scripts or a little tool support oneself to do consistency checks on the UML models. And then, of course, the next step up in a way would be to have a mechanical analysis of complicated requirements. And I mentioned already such as safety or security requirements, performance, and so on. And you could do this by buying a UML drawn tool to dedicated tools which are suitable for analyzing these requirements. Then of course code generation would be good to have. Test sequence generation, so these things are really there's a lot of academic research on that, but you don't really have this integrated in the industrial tools already, not so much so far. And as I already mentioned, I will not really talk about much about that today. So yeah, this tutorial will then be firstly starting with a short overview about some drawing tools, just a rather personal selection of a couple of tools we looked at some time ago when we decided which tool to use ourselves, and we did some kind of comparison. Then I will talk about how you can actually then bind or do some tool binding from a commercial UML editor to your little program, your script, or whatever you wrote in order to analyze the UML models. And in particular, I will present a framework which we developed for that purpose and which is also freely available, also including the source code. So in case you're interested in that, you could either use that, reuse it, or maybe at least learn from how we did this and do something similar yourself. And then I will also present an example application for a tool which does some sophisticated analysis of UML models, and this is then in the security area, so that's a tool which can automatically analyze UML models which specify security critical systems which actually make use of cryptographical algorithms. So quite a heavy heavy task to solve for an automated tool, and so this is sort of the leading edge, you could say, and if you wanted to call it that way, in terms of the difficulty. I mean, most of the time, what one would be interested in would be, and in practice, of course, would be things like consistency checks, which are not so difficult to implement, but here I just want to demonstrate that you can actually do some heavy work there. And then in the end, I would like to point out some other approaches in a similar nature. And actually, also these were also done by other people in our department. So there's quite a lot of work there. Okay. So yeah, firstly, maybe before I actually start with the tutorial, I would like to ask you on your interests maybe and your background. So so two questions. So firstly, your background in terms of UML, and secondly, your background in terms of industry or academia. So firstly, how much do you know about UML, as in beginners, intermediate, or advanced? So maybe just raise a hand, whoever is a beginner in UML. So some beginners, then who is intermediate and advanced? Okay, yeah, so yeah, I think there's already some knowledge there, so I don't actually have to give a real introduction to the UML notation, and I think this should work. And then the second question, your background, either from academia or industry. So please raise a hand if you work in academia, university, and in industry. Okay, so also a well-mixed audience, so I will try to make everyone happy. Okay, so yeah. I would like to have as much interaction as possible. I mean, from my experience, that's doesn't always happen, because some people may just prefer to relax and enjoy the information. But whenever we have a question, of course, please just ask it directly, and I will of course actually appreciate any kind of questions, because then at that point I know that not only is someone still listening, but also I know what your current state of status of with respect to following the tutorial, what you understand and which things you are especially interested in, and so on. So questions are certainly encouraged in general. And now, maybe to get some of interaction going, I thought I start by asking you, maybe get some in discussion. Does anyone of you have any opinion, any ideas on what kind of requirements one should have on advanced tool support? So what are your interests here? What would you like to use advanced tool support for, UML model analysis? Any ideas, suggestions?
So we're trying to build models based on behavior diagrams. So extracting the behavior economic.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I will also talk a little bit about that, how you can do this, how you do tool binding using XMI on the one hand, and also I will actually also talk about behavioral diagrams. I mean, that's actually one of the more advanced topics, I would say, as opposed to just looking at static properties and doing some consistency checks there. Actually looking at the behavioral properties is requires more knowledge, of course, and we'll talk a bit about that, because you then have to know how the diagrams are actually supposed to execute, as opposed to just knowing how the static structure is. Okay. Any other ideas, suggestions, opinions? Typical industry?
Yeah. I'm working with real-time systems, and I'm very interested in the completeness of the solution.
Okay. Real-time systems in particular. Okay. Yeah, as I said, also one our interested is actually also in critical systems, and one real-time would be one of the application domains that we're actually also working in. So in this tutorial I'm not going to concentrate much on real-time or things like that, but you can actually use the approach there in that area also. Okay, so yeah, I think this should be interesting then, hopefully, in what I'm going to talk about. Okay, so then, so much for the introduction. In terms of structure, it's a 3-hour tutorial with half an hour break in between at 10:30. So So after the first half, and yeah, then we continue until lunch. So firstly, I wanted to start out with some words about the editing part of this approach. Firstly, in order to be able to analyze UML models, of course, you have to draw them, you have to construct them somehow. If you want to provide tool support to analyze the UML models, then the first question is, of course, do you want to build your own editor for the UML models and have an integrated analysis engine within this whole system? Or the second option would be to reuse an existing UML editor and to have somehow try to get the tool binding to your analysis engine. Both of the approaches have advantages and disadvantages. If you have one application with your own editor in there, the obvious disadvantage is that it's more work because you have to program the editor, and to do this in a good way, that's quite a lot of work actually. So by now, I don't know if this would be a good idea. I mean, a couple of years ago, when there were not so much good tool support for UML, it could have been a reasonable thing to do. And this is actually something people have been doing in all Spartan as well. I will talk about that in the end. They have to actually define their own editor, which is also nice, but it's difficult to keep up with the industrial UML editors. So the second option has the obvious advantage that you don't have to construct the editor. The question still is what kind of binding you have between the drawing tool and the analysis tool. There are then also two options. You could try to get a plug-in for the industrial modeling tool and to design your analysis tool as a plug-in to that tool. Or you could have it completely separate and you just have an interface. As I was mentioned already, you could use XMI for that. I will explain what this is in detail. It's an XML dialect. And again, there you have advantages and disadvantages. The first approach to program your tool as a plug-in for a UML editor has the advantage that it's a bit more usable because you only have one user interface, and you may have some in the menu. You have one tab where you can click on your analysis functionality, and it's quite easy to use, and you don't have a break in the architecture. The disadvantage is that while it depends on the UML drawing tool whether this is actually possible to design your own plugin, and it may be more difficult because you have to learn a lot about the tool as opposed to just learning something about the general standard. And you then, of course, also bind yourself to this particular modeling tool, and you cannot just change, or you cannot just use your analysis tool for some other drawing tool because someone else gives you a model which was drawn in some other tool, and so on. I mean, in principle, UML models are exchangeable between industrial tools, but this doesn't always work completely correctly. So an advantage of having a separated analysis engine is that you're more independent, it's less difficult to implement. This is actually what I will focus on in this tutorial. But of course, what I will talk about here, you could also use to make this analysis application a plugin. But this is something we have not actually done yet ourselves. We could do this at some point when we say that our analysis tools are now so good that they could really be sold as a product in the industry. At that point, it would make sense to integrate it to choose an industrial modeling tool to integrate it and then try to sell it that way. But at this point, okay, so much about the general approach. And then if you choose this option, of course the first question is which kind of drawing tool you want to use. And the problem there, of course, is that there's quite a wide range of tools now. And that was our problem when we started out with this particular work. So we started out by looking at different tools. We didn't, we weren't able to give a survey on all tools because there were just too many of them. But we selected 4 or 5 of them under these criteria. So they should support all the design types we wanted and also support UML extension mechanisms. So that's something I will also mention in this tutorial. So it would be, if you want to analyze UML models for some properties, it would be helpful if you would be able to include additional information in the UML models. And you can do that using extension mechanisms that are actually contained in the UML notation in the official definition, such as stereotypes, tags, constraints, and so on. And that works quite nicely, and especially for critical application domains such as real-time security and so on, because this allows you to give to include certain specific information in the UML model, such as maybe a real-time bound or things like that. But of course, then you have to make sure that the UML tool you're using actually supports these extension mechanisms, such as stereotypes. So, yeah, these 4 tools we looked at, I will just talk about how the different advantages and disadvantages. Of course, there's the rational tool, which is quite well known and probably the market leader. But there's also now some support for UML in Visio. Then there's also the Together tool, which is quite well known. And something which was interesting from an academic point of view is this RUML project, because it's open source. And there is now a commercial variant of that project called Poseidon. So this is not a complete selection of UML tools, of course, but maybe it's somehow representative for the different kinds of things. And when you look at these tools, then so we did a short comparison to decide which kind of tool we wanted to use ourselves. There are the usual criteria you would worry about. Most important here, this particular application, of course, is because, as I mentioned already, we want to design an analysis tool where you can analyze the models. Of course, you firstly have to export the models from the tool. So that should be supported. And if you want to use standards such as XMI, then the export should actually support these standards as tightly as possible. And this is a little bit of a problem, which I mentioned already, that in principle, there are standards such as XMI, but different tools implement them in a different way. And therefore, it's not always possible to draw a UML diagram in one tool and to load it into another tool and have the same thing without having to mess around with the diagram. So that's not perfectly satisfactory at this point. So that's something you should pay attention to, that this is done, it's implemented as closely as possible. It would be nice, of course, if you could detect some kind of errors in the tool already, syntactic errors or something like that. Then, of course, it's important to the user interface, and while for us important was that it's free for use in academia, but depends on who it works.
When you say enforce model rules, do you mean rules entered by the user? Or some general syntactic rules?
At this point, general syntactic rules. And rules ended by the user, this is really something more about what we are working on and what I will talk about in this tutorial. This doesn't really exist so much, this doesn't really exist yet in the industrial tools. Yeah. So rational rules is, of course, the market leader and one of the oldest tools in the market. So there are actually free academic licenses. Quite widely used, it's also an advantage, and you can have an export for different XMI versions. Only our particular problems, because we want to use these UML extensions, at least at the versions we looked at, which is as I mentioned already, quite some time ago now, 2 years. So this overview is not quite current now. I haven't checked this specifically again for this tutorial. One should check that if, you know, if one's interested in using one of these tools, and maybe one should check whether these disadvantages are still there. But at that point, we found that the stereotypes are, custom stereotypes are supported, but not self-defined stereotypes, which one would like to define oneself, and also not tags or constraints. Then limited support for checking syntactic correctness, and in fact, lack of compatibility between the different versions. Okay, if you only use one version, that's not a problem, and also with other Rational products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, not in too much detail at that point. No.
Because so we work in our university, we had a kind of partnership with Rational, mm-hmm. and we work with UCD, mm-hmm. and so it's a mix between UML tool mm-hmm. and also development environment, because it's running as a plugin on top of Eclipse.
Okay.
And I've developed a kind of extension with a profile. Mm-hmm. So you have also stereotypes, you have also profile and OCL support. So it's a bit more, I think, advanced for supporting UML mm-hmm. extension.
Okay, yeah.
But the problem with OCL, it's a kind of rational OCL. So it looks like rational, but yeah. It's not really.
Yeah, same problem there, also at XMI, yeah. Okay, yeah, so, yeah, as I said, this is not really complete, so there are many different versions and systems which are better in content, maybe. But I just wanted to say this in order to get to give you an impression what kind of features to consider when you think about a tool and what kind of problems there may be with some of the tools. Then together, also, to get the license put, platform independent, you can use it in different platforms. User interface, we like that, and export actually to different XMI versions, because as just as the UML itself, you have different versions for XMI being published, and that's of course also some kind of problem, you know, if you have old models with old XMI versions and so on, so you can get the usual chaos there, you know, with different UML versions, different XMI versions, and then different tools, and you know. yeah, it can get a bit messy, so that's a practical thing you have to worry about. But here you can actually do the conversion to different XMI versions, which is nice. But our problem again there was at that point at least, the versions we looked at back then, again custom stereotypes, yes, but not self-defined stereotypes and also not tagging constraints. Then Visio. In a way, you could say typical for a Microsoft product, in the sense that it has a good user interface, so it's quite well developed from the usability point of view, and also quite good functionality, full support for extensions, correspondence is fine, and dynamic checks for syntactic correctness, so that's really quite nice. So something one would be used to from Word maybe, but new or free academic license, unfortunately. I think there are also some schemes. It could be that we are actually part of one of these schemes now, where you can actually get this for free also. I'm not actually sure if this is completely true. But then, something typical, as I said, maybe for Microsoft, the proprietary undocumented file format, because, well, they want to keep the secrets from themselves, and the XMI export is also limited, so...
I thought that they did not support behavior diagrams at all.
Yes. Yes, in terms of drawing.
Only in class diagrams and...
In terms of drawing or in terms of exporting? Even drawing
diagrams? All of them. I thought Visio didn't have any behavior diagrams.
Yes, so...
Yes.
Yeah, maybe they have added them later or something.
Some time ago.
Yes. Yeah, so I think by now, yeah. But as I said, yeah, XMI export is limited and file format is the Packer, you cannot access the information there, and you don't have round-trip engineering. So whenever you do code generation, you cannot go back from the code to the model, which you can get in, you can do in other tools. And then, so this, open source-based tool, firstly, ArgumL started out for ISTL, an open source project. That's quite nice. And then there's this commercial variant, Poseidon, where they started out with, actually some of the people who worked on ArgumL started out to actually make an industrial tool. It is actually still open source and written in Java, therefore also platform independent. And here the advantage in terms of what we're trying to do here in this tutorial is that the models are actually stored in XMI, and they actually use a mechanism for doing that, which I think ensures that it is really rather close to the official definition of XMI, because they use a certain framework, which I will explain later, the MDR framework within their tool, and they can, that way they can make use of the official DTDs, which define the XMI standard. It's quite nice, and it's also, I think, quite mature. At some point, at least back then, there were some negative points about performance. If you had a large UML model, then you know it could take some time to do things, depending on how much workspace you have, maybe, and so on. Work memory. So I think this has also improved by now, but that was some point to worry about, maybe. And so in the end, when we had to make our decision which tool to use for our work now to extend for analysis of UML models, this is actually what we used. And this is not, so this doesn't mean that I'm trying to make advertisement for that, but I just mentioned this here because if you want to look at our tools, then you can use them together with models that are created with this tool. And of course, again, in theory, you can use them also together with models that are created with other industrial modeling tools, but in practice, as I said already, there are some compatibility problems with XMI. And then, this is something I said already, we also considered how well this actually works, exchanging UML models using XMI between different versions, but as you can see here, this is really a bit limited. I mean, this diagonal looks more positive than it is, because of course you can export and import it to the same tool, and this really shouldn't be there actually. But otherwise it looks rather limited, so that's the problem, to exchange models between different tools at this point. Okay, so just as an overview about what kind of tools one could use and what kind of things one would have to worry about when choose a tool. So now, start with the technical stuff. Firstly, of course, the approach taken in this tutorial is to have a tool binding, so use an existing modeling tool and then export the models in XMI and import it to the analysis engines. And so the first question there is, of course, how do you get how do you get the information out of the XMI file? So firstly, XMI, I mentioned already, is a special XML dialect, which means that you can use the usual tools that are available for XML by now. And this means, firstly, you can use general purpose language such as Perl and others which have integrated XML parsers by now. That's one option. Then second option to get all the information from the XMI file is to use a special purpose XML parsing language such as XSLT, and there are also a couple of others around which allow you to conveniently parse the XML or XMI file in this case. And the third option is to use the so-called data binding approach. And there the idea is that you use some kind of framework which allows you to input or to upload the UML or the XMI file into the framework and to access the information stored in the XMI file on the conceptual level of the UML model. And this exists, for example, for Java, so this means that you can your tool can use Java methods to access the information that is actually stored in the XMI file, the information about the UML diagram, such as asking the framework how many classes are, or which kind of classes are in the UML model, and then for each of the classes you can ask which attributes does this class have, and so on, and all of that using just Java methods. And that's quite convenient, I think, because you don't have to do any parsing of the XMI yourself, but you can just use the Java interfaces, and hopefully this also eases the task of switching between different UML versions. As you probably know, every year or so a new UML version is officially finalized, and this means, unfortunately, if you want to construct tool support for UML models, you have two choices: either stick with the old UML version with the disadvantage that you look outdated and that you may have problems exchanging the UML models with other people who use the current version, or you have the other option to upgrade your analysis engine to the new version, which may mean some work. So depending on what actually you're interested in, you may choose one of the other options. And at this point, you probably know that we're pretty much done with finalizing the UML 2.0 version, which is a bit of a bigger step in the UML sequence. It can be expected that every year or so there will be a small change, again, UML 2.1 and so on. And this is something where I have to make a decision about whether or how often to upgrade the analysis tool with changes in the UML. And actually, I have to admit that our tool is still at UML 1.5, the main reason is actually that the official GTD for UML 2.0 has not been officially published yet. So if they do this, and should be done in a matter of weeks maybe now, then we have to make the difficult decision whether we want to take up the work and upgrade to UML 2.0 or just leave it at 1.5. But I guess there will be no way around at least this time to upgrade it, because it's really a major change. But it will need some work there. So after this discussion, I already hinted at why I think data binding is a good option. Disadvantage maybe is, of course, you firstly have to learn how to use these frameworks, and they may be a bit more heavy to learn than like a special purpose parsing language. But I think it's a good investment in time. And fortunately, there are actually quite a few frameworks there already. And this is firstly an example in the general XML setting is Castor, a framework which has been around for quite some time now, which allows you to do this kind of data binding for XML in general. And even more fortunately for XMI, there are special frameworks around which especially support XMI. And this is even more convenient. And there are two of them. So one of them, which I know anyway, one of them is a framework by Novasoft, Nova UML or something. And the second one is part of NetBeans, and it's MDR, the metadata repository. And actually, here the idea is to be more, even with the XMI framework, to be more general than just be able to access UML models that are stored in XMI, But as I will explain on the next couple of slides, you can also, in principle, define your own modeling notation, not UML, but using a general an approach called MOF. You could also define a completely different modeling notation, which doesn't have anything in common with UML, and you could still use this framework. So this could still be interesting for doing other things if you, at some point you're not interested in UML anymore because the world may have moved on or whatever. Although I don't expect this to happen anytime soon. Okay, so yeah, NDR, this is actually what we chose to use then. Although there would have been this alternative, which I mentioned by Novasoft. The practical reason here was that we found out that the tool that we wanted to use anyway, this Polydon tool, actually also uses NDR internally. So the hope is then, or our hope was that this way, well, there's little that can go wrong in terms of compatibility issues, because we even use the same framework inside our tool and use the same DBs. So hopefully we actually end up using the same XMI as they use. So the decision in the end to use Poseidon and to use MDR for our work was the practical reason that hopefully this way we get as little problems with XMI compatibility as possible. This is what we chose to use, and the advantages I already mentioned. Firstly some background about how UML is defined and how MDR lets you access the UML models. So I just mentioned already the MOF standard, and this is something which was actually also standardized by the Object Management Group, the industry consortium which defined also the UML. So it's the Meta Object Facility, and the goal of this is to provide a framework which allows you, for example, to define the UML notation. But it has already been used to define other kinds of notations, such as the Common Warehouse Model, and so you can also do that. And it's quite, in a way, using this kind of approach is quite a good way of doing it, also because UML keeps changing itself, so it's good to have a framework in order to incorporate the changes to UML and so on. And the approach which I explain on the next couple of slides is the so-called metamodel approach. The idea is there simply that you view the UML model. You define this by this meta, you have a definition of the UML notation, and the point is here that this definition you then also view as a model. But because it's sort of on a higher level of abstraction, it's then called a meta model. But I will explain this on the next slide or so. Then XMI, I mentioned already, is the specific XML dialect which allows you to store UML models, and it's or more general to store any kind of model which is defined in this MOF framework, in particular UML. These XMI verses can then be defined using DTDs, as we know from XML. Then something which is used or which is offered within the MDR framework are so-called Java metadata interfaces, and these you can use as someone who creates some tool support write a program which accesses the information in the UML model, for example, through these interfaces using the NDAR framework. So this I mentioned just now, just to explain this in a bit more detail, what we mean by this meta-modeling approach, and you may have heard about this. I mean, people are actually talking about that quite a bit. I mean, also here at the UML model, the UML conferences, there will be quite a few talks about meta-modeling, sometimes if you look at that, it looks a bit complicated and a bit difficult to understand. All these things about matter, and you know how many ever matters. looks a bit esoteric maybe at some times, but it just means, well, if you just look at it plainly without talking too much about these abstract ideas, just means that, well, in the middle maybe, starting out there, okay, what we consider are of course UML models, such as UML class diagrams, and we define that these fit on a certain level of abstraction, which we call M1, which is the business model. And then you can go in two directions. You can either become more concrete by instantiating the models with something which actually exists in reality, you could say. And a model is just a model which you can write down on paper, we could say intuitively, and what you want to have is a program which you can actually physically execute on a computer. So you go down one level of abstraction to get something more concrete, then you get to the level M0 is called, so there's the data, you could say, the program, could be a particular instance of a model, which could be an implementation of, in this case, of the UML class in Java. But you can also go the other direction, go up in terms of level of abstraction, because, of course, you want to define the UML precisely enough to be able to construct full support for that, and the definition of UML can actually again be written down in terms of a UML diagram. This sounds a bit like a circle, of course, because how can you define something using it, using itself as a notation, which is in terms of something like a philosophical problem, you could think. But anyway, if you try to do this, you have the UML definition on the higher level of abstraction, and this is then called the meta-model level, and it's called M2. And this you can actually define yourself as a user. Although most people will only work on these two levels, namely the developers who use UML to define a specification and then implement a specification. Here I will talk a little bit about this as well, because if you want to construct full support for UML models, you at least have to know how UML is defined to be able to do that. But then of course these definition models then also have to be somehow defined. You have to be able to say how the models can be expressed, and as I said just now, something you could do is using a sort of UML notation again, but the point is simply that these meta models are then again defined on a higher level. And this is the sort of meta model M3 level, and this is once and for all defined by the OMG. You can, starting from there, you can define the definition of UML, and then you can define the UML diagrams, and you can write the code. Of course, you could then ask the question, why stop here, you know? You could keep on going upwards, and if you're interested in that kind of thing, you should be doing set theory, probably. This is a completely different area now, of course, and because I have a background in mathematics, it's quite fun to note that people worrying about formal foundations for set theory in mathematics, they actually had the same kind of problem, and there are something people actually used to do decades ago. There was one approach where they actually went up infinitely many levels, and then in set theory you're quite happy with having infinite things of something, and so you can still go up there. But in terms of practice, this is not a good thing to do, of course, because you don't usually have infinitely many things of anything around in practice, okay? So, yeah, you just have to stop there and say, this is just given, you know, and stop here. But, okay, maybe I'm making a little bit of fun here, because at some point, you know, I sometimes think that people get too much excited about meta-modeling, you know, and it's, you know, it's even confusing for me. Although I'm, you know, working in academia on these issues, I should understand that, that sometimes I just say, stop, I just want to look at UML models, I want to know how they're defined, and I want to get to code, and that's enough. Okay, so long explanation, and just a short end of the story. But yeah, just an example for that, just what I said as a concrete example. You have concrete UML models on the model level. You can go down to the running program or some kind of data in a sort of database maybe. You can go up as to the level where UML defines how your UML model looks like, and then go up another step to where the MOF model defines how your UML looks like, for example. Okay, so now getting back to the tool, MDR now offers different kind of services. So this is the MDR framework. Firstly, you can of course load and store the MOF meta model, because according to this hierarchy which I just explained, this is something you have to do in order to get going at all. So you have to sort of start from the top and upload all this information in order to be then able to upload a UML model and then get to your code. And this is maybe why you could think that MDR looks a bit complicated if you look at it, because you actually start at that level. But it's quite a clean way of doing this, instead of defining your own parser, which could be quite buggy, because you have to understand the UML definition and so on, and it's quite a lot of work. And so instead of doing that, you can here just upload the MOF meta model, which is available from the OMG in XML format. You can upload a new version whenever you make changes and so on. And then you can instantiate the meta model, meaning that you then have an actual model, a UML model, by again uploading, in this case, again an XML file which contains the UML model. So first we initialize the MDR framework with the UML definition, and then each time you want to use it, you just load the UML model in form of an XML file again. And then you can generate this JMI interface, which I mentioned already, and you can use the interface to access the UML models which you uploaded as an XML file. This is the corresponding picture. So you start out with firstly uploading an XML file which defines the UML version. This is a slightly older slide, so it's 1.4. You can still, you can already get the 1.5 from the UML, UML site, and the 2.0 file should be around very soon. I haven't checked actually in the last couple of days, but should be there soon. So this you upload into the MDR tool in terms of then you have the MOF model, and you can instantiate that to be able to then upload your own UML model, again in terms of the XML file, and then you can generate the JMI definition. You can write your own application and access the UML model through this interface.
Your step four on that diagram. Mm-hmm. What is happening in step four? The XML file is being read by the.
Yeah, so the XML file which contains the UML model as it was generated from the UML drawing tool is loaded into the MDR framework,
yeah.
And the MDR framework then it already has the JMI interface, because they were generated earlier, and you can then access them using through these interfaces. So what is JMI? It's an IDL mapping for manipulating metadata. So in particular, it's an API for manipulating the information which are contained in an instance of the meta model. And while, of course, you again have this sort of circle, but fortunately, MOF itself is MOF compliant, so you can actually do this. Meta models can then be manipulated by this IDL mapping. So JMI is really a MOF to Java mapping. And you can actually, have some reflective APIs there, which give you quite some powerful mechanisms to manipulate this kind of complex information. And MDR actually implements these interfaces. So yeah, these reflective facilities, so this slide actually from a presentation which I will reference in the end, Fong is quite nice some way of presenting this information here. So as it is defined in the MOF, it is now possible to firstly access the metatype of an object and to ask the metatype for each one of the instances and then to access the feature of the object. So some examples are given down here. So you can use methods to find out which kind of classes are contained in the UML model, which kind of hints and objects, meta objects, and so on. So you can ask about all of these informations, all of this information which is contained in the UML model by making use of these JMI facilities. And these you can access them through interfaces that are generated here. Some examples are given here. So you they have an element which has an interface. Then this is you may in particular then have a named element which extended earlier interface with additional information and so on. And that way you can also access the meta objects at this point. And something you have to remember is that in order to create an object, you firstly have to contact its meta class, which is a singleton. And again, meta association is also a singleton. So you have to create an object, you have to contact its meta class again. Again, that's a singleton, and the root meta package in this entry point to access this singleton. So you can then, as I said already, you can use the MDR repository to load the models, and this means then that if you load the model, then this means in fact that first you have to load the meta model, and there are some objects which you need, namely the MDR repository, the MOF package, and the XMI text representation. These are actually contained in the MDR. And so the way this would look like then, if you use Java to access the information in the XMI file. There's actually still a German comment in here, unfortunately, so this means create objects. You can see here how you can use Java to actually access this information. What you need at this point is that in order to use this and to read the data, you firstly have to have an open repository in the package, and of course you have to know which kind of JMI interfaces you need. So you can find that out by looking through the definitions, for example, and then looking at the official DTD which defines the XMI document, and you may have to refer to the official UML definition as well. So the practical problem there is, of course, you don't really want to use to read the UML definition from first page to last page to be able to start with this kind of work on constructing tools for UML, because it's not a nice thing to read, and it's quite, you know, quite long document, about I think 800 pages or so, and were quite densely written. So when we try to do this, when we try to access information contained in the UML model, the way we do this rather is a more practical approach by sort of trial and error. So So we draw a couple of diagrams, we store them in XMI, and then we look at the XMI files and try to find where the information from the diagram is contained in the XMI file, and then we find out what the JMI interfaces are that we need to access this information. So it's a bit of a more trial and error approach, you could say, but it works much faster than if you just sit down and read the complete XML specification. And somehow it works. And this is actually supported by a quite nice explorer, which is contained in the NetBeans NDR implementation, which you can use to browse the repositories. So you can, for example, upload a meta model, and you can have a look at how the meta model is defined by using this kind of browser. So that works quite nicely for that as well. Okay, so much about the general approach. So if there are no questions at this point, then before the coffee break, I would like to start with this framework which we've been developing. So again, the motivation here, why I present this here, is from two points of view, you could say, either to at this particular implementation to demonstrate how one could implement this kind of tool to access the information, to analyze the UML models, just to learn this at the end of this example application. But as I said already, this is actually, the framework is actually available as open source, so you can also use it as a starting point yourself for your own tool. But you could also just use it as it is and just, as I will explain in more detail, it's possible to write plugins, to plug them into the framework, and plugins which do the analysis of the UML models. And this has the advantage that you don't have to worry about all this input-output and parsing and so on, but you just write a plugin which accesses the UML model through the Java methods, and the framework actually also provides a web interface and a GUI interface, a graphical user interface. So it might be interesting to use that as it is also. Okay, so firstly some general information about this framework, so called CSUML because the main use we use it for at the moment is critical systems development, so a framework which allows us to write plugins for the framework which can do various kind of analysis tasks, and our usage of that is critical systems analysis, like safety, security, real-time, and so on. And so the goal we set ourselves was, in a way, we wanted to extend the NDR framework, because the NDR framework itself just gives you the access to the UML model, but of course you have a lot of other functionality which you want to do once and for all, and not you don't want to have to repeat that for every kind of analysis plugin you want to write. For example, I mentioned already the user interface thing, so you want to maybe have a graphical user interface or a web interface, and you don't want to have to do this again every time you write a new analysis application. The way this works now is, as I think, shown on this diagram here, the goal of usage of this framework is that a developer uses a UML editor such as Poseidon, which is what we're using, but in principle you could also use another UML editor in order to create the UML diagram. This is then stored as an XMI file, and this is uploaded within the MDR framework. Then our CSUML framework, using MDR, can access the information in the using the JMI interface. This is actually defined, as I said already, you can also actually do this via a web interface. So this framework defines the web interface which the developer can use to upload the UML model and then have the analysis done on our web server, for example. And within the framework, we then already defined different kinds of plugins, such as a checker for static properties of the UML diagram, or also for dynamic properties of the diagram. So we already defined a couple of plugins within the framework. And some of them make use of dedicated analysis engines, such as model checkers, theorem provers, and so on. Whenever you have properties which you want to analyze, which are more sophisticated, so it's not so easy to just write the check in Java, maybe, which we did actually when we did the static check. So that's we simply wrote in Java because it's not so performance critical. But for the dynamic checks, we use a dedicated analysis engine. So the way this works now is, on the one hand, the static checker just checks the model and gives some kind of output to the error analyzer. On the other hand, the dynamic checker just generates an input file for the analysis engine, which on the one hand includes information about the UML model, whatever is relevant to check the properties. On the other hand, it includes the properties that are supposed to be checked by this analysis engine. Then we get back some kind of result. And this is put into this error analyzer together with the result from the static checker. And then the user, maybe again over the web interface, gets firstly a text report, which points out what kind of problems may be in the UML model. If you want to analyze the UML model for certain requirements, and some of them may not be fulfilled. And also, what is given back is a modified UML model, where the potential problems are actually highlighted within the UML model, because that's really much more usable than only having a text report, because then you would have to search the UML model where the problem may be, and it's better to have this just, you know, outlined or hidden within the model. Okay, so that's the intended usage, and sort of the bottom part here is this UML framework, which includes on the one hand, of course, importantly the NDR framework, and then also different kinds of analysis engines. And I did that already. It's now possible for anyone else who is interested to define their own plugins themselves and use it within this framework. So the goal for this framework now is to have to be able to write independent tools and plugins within this framework, such as this dynamic and static checker. And this should be as simple as possible. It should be media independent, would be nice, because then you can use the same tool via a web interface or maybe a graphical user interface. And of course, it should on the one hand be easy to use for the developer who's supposed to use the tool in the end, but it should also be easy to use for the people who develop the plugins. And it should be easy to maintain, of course, because while you get different kinds of UML versions, and hopefully the upgrading to the new UML version will be easy, because you just have to upload a new DTD into your framework, but you may still have to do some changes, and therefore it's important to pay attention that you have a simple architecture and it's easy to maintain. And again, this is done work with other people in Unix. So yeah, the concept is you have a set of plug-in tools, and the framework then offers interfaces which the analysis plugins can make use of. This means then that these analysis plugins implement different kinds of commands, or rather the framework implements the commands. These commands are, for example, that the analysis target can ask for what kind of information is stored within the UML model, or the analysis plugin can ask the framework to give back a test report or give back a changed UML model and so on. So this, in particular, this framework includes the so-called DKI tool. This is the user interface. So as I said, it's either a web interface or a GUI, and then also you can also have a command line interface. Technically, the tool implements different kind of interfaces. So firstly, a command line interface where you only communicate with the tool or the framework using text input and output, and then also the GUI and the web interface interfaces. Then you need some other kinds of interfaces in order to access the MDR repository and also to render the text information and to store and retrieve tool settings. So this is an overview of these different kinds of interfaces. And the way this is now implemented is that you only have to really implement the tool base, and from that, if you don't implement any console, web, or GUI interfaces yourself, then they are automatically derived by the framework. So it's enough to just define the tool-based interface, and then you, in a way, you get the web interface for free, which can be also quite inconvenient. Interfaces. And well, it probably doesn't make sense to talk to all of these in too much detail here, but of course, you need different kinds of interfaces. Firstly, as I mentioned already, to access the console, and maybe the GUI and the web interface if you want to implement it yourself and not just use the pre-generated interfaces. You have to initialize the base and get the name of the analysis plugin and the description. And so on. So if you have any questions about it, if you actually really want to use the framework, you can just ask me, and or maybe write an email to look at that in more detail. This is what I mentioned already. On the previous slide, we have some default wrappers here, which allow you to only implement the tool base, and using these wrappers you get the console and the GUI and the web interface as well. Something else you need to know then is, of course, the command parameters. And again, the goal here is to have functionality which is as media independent as possible. So some examples there. We have on the later slide. So if one wants to implement one of these plugins, because it would be good to have them to be able to realize them through the web interface and the GUI and also the console interface at the same time, which would make sure that, for example, with respect to the text output, one doesn't use any specific commands, for example, for HTML or the text interface, but one can then use these particular commands to do the text output in a universal way, which will then be converted to either HTML or to a text output to the console. And the execution cycle of the framework now is that firstly you have to do an initialization call to call up the tool, for example through the web interface. So I will, in the second part of the tutorial, I will give a demo on this. But just to explain this very shortly now, firstly you start up the framework by accessing the web page, for example, and then within the framework you can access, for example, a particular analysis plugin, and you can do this iteratively. So you can firstly have different commands for each analysis plugin which you can call and which carry parameters, and these are then executed by the analysis plugin, which may lead to a system change, and this system change is actually stored within the framework, so that when you call another command by a specific analysis plugin, the previous commands are still there, or the history rather. So one example for that, which I can demonstrate after the break, is that we have a simulation plugin where you can get a simulation for a UMA state chart, for example, and there this works in this way that you can access each time, while you list this, each time you access the analysis plugin, you can execute a command which says execute the next transition, for example. You can also choose which transition is supposed to be executed. Then, this is the parameter to the command, then the plugin will execute this command, and will, in this case, by executing the transition, which leads to a change in the plugin, because the UML model is now at a new point in the diagram, and then you can repeat this thing by, for example, firing the next transition and so on. And you do this by interactively communicating with this particular analysis plugin. So this is the way it is being accessed. And yeah, at this point we will actually come to the coffee break. So are there any questions about the first half so far? Okay, then I would say we have half an hour of break now until 11 o'clock, and then we just come back here later. Thank you.